Before we get started with today's show, I want to tell you about another great ESPN podcast, 30 for 30 Podcast. 30 for 30 Podcast presents March 11th, 2020, the story of the day the NBA shut down and the pandemic became real for many Americans. As told by those who lived the events of that day and built entirely with archival and exclusive interviews, including Rudy Gobert and Dr. Anthony Fauci, March 11th, 2020 will tell the story of a day that started in one reality and ended in a new one. 30 for 30 Podcast presents March 11th, 2020. Be sure to check it out. You can download and listen to 30 for 30 Podcasts as well as The Right Time wherever you get your podcasts. Also, Stephen A's World streams weekdays on ESPN Plus, bringing fans Stephen A. Smith's entertaining perspective and deep expertise with signature guests. The best interviews of Stephen A's World are now available as a podcast every Wednesday. Listen wherever you get your podcasts and watch Stephen A's World on ESPN Plus. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Right Time. My name is Bomani Jones. Thanks for listening wherever you get your podcast. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. It's that time of week where we have a guest join us and coming to us live. He is, you know, the best college football writer in America. Check him out at, where am I telling people to check you out at? I keep forgetting.
Right now, we're sort of in between things. You can do the full cast. We always listen to the full cast, but on Twitter at EDSBS, probably the best place to find me at the moment.
Spencer Hall, what's going on?
You're looking at it. doing, you know, growing a beard, buying some overalls, really leaning into the brand, marveling at people going to the mat for a kind of racist song that is based on I've been working on the railroad. I'm with you. This is where I'm at. It's 2021 and we're all a little lost.
Yeah, let's start with this overalls thing very briefly, though, because we wound up talking about this right before we started, and I will share this with the rest of you. So I ain't saying nothing about it, but I took the week off. Was it last week? Yeah, I took last week off because the week before that, I had a minor surgical procedure. They had to like go in my ear and do something. And anybody that has had like an orthopedic surgery before, like I had a knee surgery, one thing you have to remember about surgery is, you know, it's anesthetic. They put you under and you're basically dead to the world. So they treat you with a level of disrespect one would never treat a corpse with, because you're not really dead. It's just like you're dead. And so I'm assuming that in order to get into my ear, they had to do all kinds of contortions with my neck, because I came out of the surgery feeling fine. And then the next day, I still felt fine, except my neck did not feel like it was still attached to my body. So I had to get on the internet and rush order one of them things that you put in the microwave and then you like put it on your neck and you put it around your shoulders, right? And this one is a very particular brand. And now I just wear this thing all the time because it's got lavender in it. And so you smell it and you feel relaxed and it just kind of sits on your shoulder. And since I'm just recording a podcast, I can sit here with it on my shoulder right now. I learned that Spencer wants to wear overalls all the time.
Yeah. Well, right now, I can kind of tell everybody you can't see. We got a little camera working here. Bo kind of has this like space cowl look. Like yes. It's actually kind of a very cool, like we ran into you and you're some kind of space duke with this thing around your shoulders.
Yeah. But also, if the camera shot cut off a little bit higher, you would think I had been shopping with DeRay.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's blue and it's got like it look a little bit like a puffy vest.
Honestly, like if we did just from here up, from your chest up, you'd kind of look like you could be working the Earth, Wind, and Fire show.
Yes.
In 1980, right? Background tech of some sort in like a space vest, which I think is an amazing look. Now, the overalls thing, you go, oh, this is just part of the like Southern slob look that you're embracing by getting the overalls, right? I got to tell you something. The feeling you get from a pair of overalls by being able to put a thumb in each strap at the top and just kind of rocking on your heels, surveying the land, right? You might feel out of control in your situation. Go ahead and hook the thumbs. If you hook the thumbs, you're just like, I'm not out of control. I'm just figuring out what to do next, boys. Because you know what? When you wear overalls, even if you don't have a single practical skill in the world, like me, you feel like, I don't know, I'm ready to work. I got the tools. I got the vest. Let's go.
You know what really dawned on me as you said that? I think like we may have accidentally like solved, I don't know if a mystery of the world, but you'll get where I'm coming from here. Okay. When you take pictures or whatever it is, what is the thing that people commonly say? Don't know what to do with my hands, right? Like it's always what am I doing with my hands? And like, if you've got a camera on you, you'll be like, yo, what am I supposed to be doing with my hands? What if a significant portion of our bandwidth every day is spent subconsciously asking ourselves, what am I supposed to do with my hands? And then once you have solved the mystery of what to do with your hands, everything else feels like it's under control because you have been putting so much grind into figuring out what to do with your hands.
I'm convinced that's why coaches carry a clipboard. They don't need the clipboard. They know what's on that sheet. It's not like they forgot. This is the only thing that they think about or care about. They know the whole sheet. You know why they carry the clipboard? You know why they carry the play sheet? They carry it because it's a reminder that you know what to do with your hands, and it makes you look like you know what you're doing, all right? Right. And if you can't make it, you got to fake it until you make it, right? And then after you make it, it's a security blanket, right? As long as you know what to do with your hands, you're okay.
Think about all the random things that you find yourself and like wind up doing with your hands, like randomly putting your hands in your back pockets, for example. Mm-hmm. There's no purpose to that. Why would you do that? Are you trying to rub your own booty? Possible. But maybe it's just like, I don't have anything to do with my hands. And then, of course, there is, this is one of those things that historically Black people have been led to believe that they're the only ones that do, but I'm positive that white people do it also, which is, for whatever reason, having your hand on your genitals, right? Maybe directly on them, maybe one layer between, maybe two, right? But what else are you going to do with your hands?
To which I would point out to anyone, you know, this is a universal, and to that I give you the Al Bundy.
Yes.
The Al Bundy. What did Al Bundy do in order to attain security and comfort in his own home and assert that he was in a place where he was completely in control and safe? One hand down the front of the pants. That's the first thing Al Bundy did. All right. As archetypical a white American male as I can possibly imagine Al Bundy.
The most average white man in the history of television.
Yeah. Except for one game in high school where he set a touchdown record. But except for that, perfectly average man. There's one more thing like that, by the way, that I see going around on social media sometimes, right? Because as we know, there's Twitter, and there's a significant official portion of Twitter that is this Black Twitter. Yes. And Black Twitter contributes, I would say, 94% of the value to Twitter.com. Okay.
The fun, at least. Yes.
The fun, right? And or information. And by that, I'm going to get to that, because one thing says this is something that only Black people do. Do you have a drawer in your kitchen where you just throw stuff? That's like a real, you know, Black thing to do. And I'm like, no, that's a universal. Everybody's got the mess drawer. Everybody. There's like condiment packets and stuff, like a couple of weird utensils, right? Like if you have a honey spoon, or if you have like a garlic grater or something, that goes in there, right? Receipts, whatever you got. That's a universal. I want anybody listening to this to know that I'm not trying to culturally appropriate the stuff drawer. The stuff drawer that's a universal. Yes. Everybody's got that.
Yes. Along with the box of cables.
Because you think you're going to get real sophisticated with it. You're like, USB is going to be up here. No, box of cables. And they're going to get tangled because cables move on their own. If you put four cables completely in line and they don't touch each other, put them in a drawer. Guess what? In 3 days, they're going to be an insane Gordian knot that is going to take you 3 days to untangle.
And since Radio Shack isn't hot in the streets anymore, you kind of do need to keep your cable drawer, because that's the thing. Everybody has, Radio Shack's still open. Why? Because some antiquated cable has suddenly become necessary in my life.
Mm-hmm. Also because there are 5,000 ham radio operators who are convinced when the grid goes down, all that stuff I bought at Radio Shack, they're going to keep this radio up.
Yes.
Everybody's going to rely on me. I'm going to be the internet. You'll have to come to Ham John to get on this ham radio.
I've actually realized it, though. I feel bad for this generation of kids, because they're not really going to know. Like, they don't really understand the whole cable situation. Like, now, so you're running an HDMI cord from either your cable box or whatever, right? The joy of, I got to hook up this stereo. I read this story once. This was really interesting, because my dad used to always ask me when I get home to help him, like, install the stereo or something like that. And I used to get mad frustrated by it, because I'm like, you can do this. Why are you waiting for me to get here? Until I realized that, like, that is how your dad offers to spend time with you, is let's install this stereo. And maybe, like, because I was really frustrated about it at first, but then I came to the realization, it was like, oh, no, this is affection. Got you, right? Like, as opposed to, why are you adding work to me, you know, to do this? And then I read this story somebody wrote maybe a year or two later. And it was about a guy in the same exact situation. But before he came to the realization I came to, his father died. And so he had, like, as I recall, he had like this breakdown moment of seeing a stereo and realizing what the deal was, you know, with all of that stuff and everything else. And the hooking up a stereo with your dad thing, I feel like as they've made the stereos a little bit too user friendly, that's going to go away.
Yeah, it'll go away, and you'll have to figure out how to hook up with Bluetooth. And that just doesn't have the same touch. And additionally, by the way, this is across devices. This was a chance for your father is significantly older than mine. My father is of a generation where they didn't have skills. They didn't. This is when specialization happens, and people started just going, I'm going to take my car to the mechanic because the car has become too complex for me to fix. There's a computer attached. I can't do anything with that. This goes past. I'm just going to pop open the hood and work on this carburetor, right? He can do one thing, and that is he can connect wires to wires. So when I was a kid, highlight of my dad's moment as a technological marvel and probably the peak of his technical ability as a person, we hooked up the TV to the big ass stereo that he spent too much money on so he could watch Rocky and hear the theme song during the big running step sequence over the speakers. And when we did that, oh man, that's a moment. That's a huge moment, right? When you get Bill Connie cranking through those things. Oh yeah. That's a father son moment for the ages that really, like, I'm not going to be able to replicate because I'm just going to be like, oh, hey, we can put it on.
It's also worth noting that he can connect wires to wires may sound patronizing, but when you really stop and think about it, it's kind of a rare skill.
It's the skill that keeps people from being electrocuted to death, right? Or gets electrocuted to death when you don't have it. That's the thing. You don't understand the value of somebody who can connect wires to wires until you buy a house and then realize you have no skills. Like, that's it. Like, most of the people listening to this, you know, I'm just guessing, you don't have any skills. You don't need them. You pretty much contract them out, right? Or you perform them for somebody else in exchange for another service. When you buy a house, you realize I would be dead in the wild in a matter of seconds because I can't fix any of this. Any of this. Simple things like wiring. When you go, like, try this test. Look up at a wire and go, could I fix that without electrocuting myself and potentially dying? You probably don't even understand how grounding works, right? And I'm not saying that just like, oh, you're dumb. No, man.
It didn't come up.
Hasn't come up. Isn't a matter of practical skills for you, okay? How are you going to fix the plumbing? You thought about how water goes down with gravity a lot? Okay, go try to fix your toilet. Chances are that's going to be a challenge for a lot of you.
I had never really thought about this right now, but I have just come up with what would be an amazing television show, but honestly a bit exploitative. And so I will say it here. And if somebody steal it from me, get it. Don't get it twisted. I'm going to sue you. But like, I don't know if I would actually do this myself, which is going to developing countries and finding the amazing skills that they have required on the basis of necessity, right? Like episode one obviously is to go to Cuba and to get down there with them dudes fixing them cars because of the embargo, they couldn't get no new cars in there for a while. So they was rolling out here with these 57 Chevys and keeping them alive. And like, they're the greatest mechanics in the world are Cubans because they had to be, because they got to fix their stuff. There is no Amazon Prime down there. You know what I'm saying? Like, we're not just going to get somebody to drop something off here in 2 days. It ain't happened. I imagine that if you go to some of these struggling places, man, there are some magicians making things happen.
I would just go around the world and I would ask construction crews how they cook lunch. That's what I would do. Because if you've hung out with construction crews of any makeup, the different variations they have for cooking on anything they find, right? Whether it's cooking stuff under the road, seen that, right? Cooking stuff on grates, like any grate. If you have like four wires, somebody's going to cook some meat on it. Okay. I have seen this happen. And cooking on shovels. And I mean globally. I mean things I have seen traveling around the world. Also, electricians around the world would be a good one because remember, during the Cultural Revolution, do you know how electricians in China tested voltage? They put the back of their hand to it. Oh. You're like, is that on? That's how they tested voltage. After the Cultural Revolution, when they didn't have any sort of trained electricians, they just kind of learned on the job, right? By the way, we don't have to do this in developing countries. When you talk about like people developing amazing skills on the fly, because that happens all over the place wherever there's any kind of like weird law. Example, I bet people in New Zealand know how to fix cars way better than we do because cars are ridiculously expensive due to export. New Zealand doesn't make any cars, so they have to import them all. And when they import them, they typically have, I think the window on it's like 10 to 15 years. So there's a bunch of old ass cars on the road in New Zealand. You know what they know how to do? Fix old ass cars where you actually had to kind of get in there and do stuff, right? So if you need somebody who can fix like a 2006 Impreza, go to Auckland. Is there somebody in Auckland who can just pop the hood on that sucker and be like, all right, we give it a crack. Let's go.
Hey, necessity, invention, mom, all comes together. Now, people who know me know I root for the University of Texas, or I have. This is becoming a thing now, right? And I mean, my buddy Joel Anderson asked me, because see, Joel is just at least 2 years older than me. And that gap in age for us is significant because he has a recollection of a time when the University of Houston was a thing. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't really have no concept of that. So, like, he can remember a little bit of, like, Fox Slamma Jamma, you know, and all that kind of stuff. He wasn't picking between the two state schools, you know, the big state schools, to figure out which team he was going to root for. And I wound up picking Texas because, really, I mean, I'm from here. Why not? You know, this is how it goes. But, man, they don't really have a history that, like, makes you want to go tell people that that's a thing that you do. Now, granted, nobody really has a history that makes you want to go out here and tell people this is a thing that you do. But, you know, after a while, it was rolling. Vince Young, you know what I'm saying? There was nothing to be ashamed of. Mac Brown never said anything problematic. There we go. And then, like, Charlie Strong gets the job. And people are like, oh, you know how they're going to be about that? I'm like, yeah, they're going to be like you would be any other place, right? And I still feel like Texas, in a way, was kind of scapegoated in the way the Strong was treated, because that would have happened, like, literally in any other place by and large, right? But it was Texas, so everybody just kind of leaned into it. Okay, cool. And then they hired this Tom Herman dude, and I wasn't on board with that from the beginning. And somehow they found a way to fire a man whom I believed should have been fired for the worst reason possible. And the reason seems to be pretty clearly he would not require his players to stand for the eyes of Texas. All the good ass reasons to fire Tom Herman, they did that. All right. So, like, I stopped thinking about it. Herman got fired. You know, they come to some compromise about the little damn song. Then they hire Steve Sarkisian. Steve Sarkisian's at the press conference. He immediately says that his players will proudly be singing the Eyes of Texas. And I stopped and I was like, oh, okay. So whoever got this job, this was requirement number one. This is this damn important to you, that this was requirement number one. And then this dude, who for what it's worth is married to a black woman, stood up and said that. And I was like, oh, way to lose your team before you even meet them. Way to go. All right. Then we get to emails, right? Emails come, and it demonstrates that a lot of the boosters were very upset about this and absolutely demanding that the players say in the Eyes of Texas. You can look it up. I'm trying to remember, one of the money quotes was the dude who was like, basically, if you don't like it, you can go somewhere else. Like, that's where they are. This is how we do things here. Okay, yeah. So they've done that. Then apparently they did a big old Eyes of Texas report, and the Eyes of Texas report comes out. And it says at the beginning that the Eyes of Texas will remain the school song, at which point I'm like, we really don't need to read the rest. But I read the rest. And they say they're not going to make the players stand for the song. Important to note, Slate has an interesting piece up that makes the point that they can't. There's this thing called the First Amendment in your state school. Like, you wouldn't be able to make them do this anyway, except for the fact that they're going to make them do it. Right. Legally, they can't. But I mean, they also can't make them work out but 20 hours a week.
Which is all they ever do, Bo. That's all they ever do. And they're not supposed to pay players either, so they never receive any financial compensation beside the rich reward of an education and a scholarship.
That's right. That's right. Mm-hmm. This is so wild that these people are actually going to the wall for this. Like, did you see that Godfrey tweet that he had when those emails first came out where he said, Texas, which wonders why it's not Oklahoma, goes full Ole Miss, which itself wonders why it's not Alabama. And I was like, this is the most perfect collection of words I've ever read.
Yeah, you need to footnote it for anyone who doesn't follow college football. And once you see the footnotes, it makes as much sense as anything that's ever been said about this sport. It is one of the most perfect statements about college football ever, because it's a series of overlapping identity politics. That's it. My favorite thing about this is that the people who would complain about the Eyes of Texas and say, why are you taking offense at this perfectly harmless song, which you know, we clearly, you have to sing because we're Texas, right? That's the problem with being inclusive about this, is to say, you know, well, we should just all be Longhorns. Okay, cool. There's this big racist part here. Okay, this part that has a nasty heritage that we don't want to participate in. And also, we happen to play football for you, right? Those same people who would take umbrage with this would be like, I'm really tired of identity politics, except for this set. I really like this set of identity politics, right? Why don't you just agree to this? Well, no, I get to shop a la carte. I get to say, you know, like, these are the same people too who would be like, listen, I believe in individual freedom and rights. Cool, cool, I do too. You know what they get to do? They get to negotiate because they have something that your ass doesn't. You know what it is? Talent, athletic ability. You like having a nice little football team. That's cool. That's cool. You like having a good football team. You know what you're going to have to do, among many other things, in order to attract that talent? Oh, you're going to have to negotiate, right? And you're going to have to negotiate on multiple fronts now, by the way. This is just like identity politics. Just one slide of this. The feds are coming after the NCAA, right? They are supporting active legal action and investigation and legislation concerning the NCAA. And they are not going to come down on the side of amateurism, right? I don't want to overreach and say, you know, because this typically happens when you get very idealistic about these things and say, oh, it's over. No, 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 no. It'll probably come down somewhere we don't want. Probably come down somewhere in between.
Right.
But generally speaking, when they get involved, it's done. The feds don't get involved in something that's like half. They're not going to get involved in a case where, oh, your defense attorney found something amazing. No, when they started the case, they had you. And chances are, if they're filing amicus briefs and they're ready, it's done. And you're going to have to pay them. Compensation is going up. The price is going up. On top of that, who owns the program? Like, that's the other thing this comes back to, is who owns the program? We've never been able to figure out who owns college football. And we only get little hints of it. And when we just decide to take away your precious little train song, when we take away the choo-choo song, right, with the sort of indirect Robert E. Lee quote in there, when we take that away, suddenly we figure out who owns college football or who thinks they own college football, because they pitched a fit over a song. Frankly, over a song that doesn't even slap. That's the thing. I'm in Texas. Like, you keep losing to Oklahoma every single way. How? How does little old Norman, Oklahoma, keep smoking moneyed, huge, talented Austin? Even the theme song beats you. It's two words. I only have to learn two words. That's it.
I hate that song so much, my God.
Yeah, everyone does.
Oh, my. You know why? It's not, I wouldn't hate it so much if I hadn't heard it played so many times in the middle of these games. Oh, goodness. Okay, let me back up. Let me back. Whew.
Yeah.
Okay. So this is what's interesting to me about Texas and the way that they're playing this with the eyes of Texas. All right? Mm-hmm. In the 1960s, the University of Texas won three national championships in the 1960s. 1970 is when integration kind of becomes a widespread thing. Like, that's when the Southern schools, by and large, began to integrate. Since then, Texas won one national championship, and it required having quite possibly the best college football player that the state has produced in this whole time period, right? Mm-hmm. Like, that's what it took for them to do that. Since then, Oklahoma has won five national championships. Since then, Alabama, I think, has won 9 or 10. Mm-hmm. Think about that, right?
Yeah.
Bryant won, like, between the 70s and 80s, won three. Stallings won one. Was Ames won five?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, nine national championships. Texas, since 1976, has won their conference outright seven times. And they're not playing in the NFC East, all right? Mm-hmm. They have been playing in conferences that they should have dominated at every turn. And why is Oklahoma better than them? Because Oklahoma wants to win at football more than it wants to do racist stuff. That's it.
Yeah.
Ole Miss lost at football for all those years because they wanted to do racist stuff more than they wanted to win at football, because Ole Miss should be Alabama. Mm-hmm. And it's not, because they wanted to be racist.
I mean, Ole Miss and Miss State really should just have a team. Ole Miss and Miss State, if they just decided, we need to merge institutions, we'll meet halfway, we'll build a stadium there, and that'll be the football team for the state. And if that happened and they didn't do racist stuff, then yeah, we would do, as we've discussed before, a team that had people like Jerry Rice.
Yes.
A team that had Walter Payton.
Jackie Slater. Lil Barty. Robert Brazil.
On top of the most moneyed quarterback in recent NFL history, Dak Prescott and Patrick Willis, right?
Yes. No, this is something that people don't understand. This is real talk. If you put together first team all Ole Miss and first team all Mississippi State, right, and put them together, and they played against first team, went to college everywhere else in Mississippi, that second team would blow their doors off.
Mm-hmm. Smoke, not close.
Yo, Steve McNair is second team other state, because Ole Miss and Mississippi State didn't offer Brett Favre. Because that's the other part about them. It's not even just that they didn't get a lot of these guys. Neither one of them offered Walter Payton. Neither of them offered Jackie Slater.
Yeah. Or Favre, yes. Who ends up, by the way, playing in like an offense that didn't even use him. Like in high school and in college, to be frank, didn't even fully take advantage of the Brett Favre skill set. That's what we're looking at here. There are 1,000 reasons why that doesn't happen. But a fun thought experiment is to do this. What if we did that for Mississippi and Alabama? Alabama, by the way, has managed to win, with Nick Saban, 6 national titles. I'm saying that because somebody's going to go, Nick won 6! Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Alabama, like, that's my favorite thing, by the way, is when you get this wrong. Alabama people are like, you counted it wrong! And I was like, I have an Alabama fan correcting me on math. I need to take this very seriously because that doesn't happen very often. I'm not saying y'all are dumb. I'm saying you're vague with qualifications of what constitutes a national title, okay? My answer with Alabama fans, by the way, is, do you think it's a national title? Do you feel like it is? Go ahead and claim it. I claim that everybody. Auburn's like, we have 7 national titles. I'm like, sure, go ahead. Like, because I can't, in our sport, we don't do that. We don't have a good way of determining a title. So if you feel you're a champion in your heart, you just go ahead and claim it. Okay.
Yes.
But if you take just the state, right? If you take just the state of Alabama and just the state of Mississippi and you take just the state of, you know, heck, even Tennessee, like Tennessee would be way better off if they just had one team. Instead, they got to fight for talent across, you know, basically 9 different states recruiting in order to get 2 football teams that are both kind of at best, right?
Yeah.
They'd be way better off going with one. That's why LSU, if you go like, okay, but what is LSU's great curse? LSU's great curse is actually opposite. They're the main show in town after Nick Saban made them the place that everybody wanted to go. And they're still kind of squandering talent. That's the other thing, is that you go, man, what's the deal with LSU? LSU has been squandering talent for 2 decades now. All right. Now, before, you could go, well, they weren't organized enough, which is true for a lot of reasons. Right. But as Marcus Spears has said, Nick Saban made that the place that talented black athletes wanted to go. Right. And that was one of the missing pieces there, along with organization. That people didn't feel comfortable at LSU. And Nick Saban made that the place to go. Now, the argument is, in the Les Miles and Ed Ogeron era, that they're not really getting the most out of being the one wellspring of talent in the state of Louisiana. Because if the Tigers want you, the Tigers are going to get you.
Yo, it is so amazing to go through the Rivals top players list of Louisiana. Do mm-hmm. it for the last 2 decades. It goes like this with them in a way that it doesn't go really anywhere else. They are getting the number one dude like 5 years. Like 5 out of every 6, 6 out of every 7. And not just the number one. They're getting the, like, you just have years where it's 1 through 8. We're getting them all, man. And if they're not getting one of them, it's probably because they recruited a dude that's higher than that dude at this same position.
Mm-hmm. And year in and year out, why aren't they a top 3 team? That's a good question. You can go ahead and ask that. I think it's probably because they haven't really been putting people in systems and developing them the way that other teams do. And when they finally did it, what did they end up with? They ended up with Joe Burrow. Also, they got a bunch of teams where we take the best guy and we put him at quarterback at high school. And why wouldn't you do that when you have the caliber of athletes that you see in Louisiana? Why wouldn't you do that? Okay, cool. You need a system that's going to do that as well. Didn't happen until they got Joe Burrow. By the way, that's another thing that Oklahoma, when you go, what has Oklahoma done better than Texas? Transfer quarterbacks. That's another thing that Oklahoma has been all about in terms of taking transfer quarterbacks and putting them in a system where they can instantly succeed. That is not something that Texas has done. To take this back to Texas, by the way, Texas has no excuses whatsoever in terms of why they aren't more successful in terms of potential resources, which takes it all the way back to the song, because why are you doing this? To me, this goes back to Texas politics.
Dude, like, that's, you don't want to be good. Like, is that just all this is? Because I think one thing that it becomes interesting also about Texas versus, say, Ole Miss at this point in time, okay? Now, granted, Ole Miss, they're playing a whole different racism game, right? Especially with the imagery and everything else. But there eventually became a measure of shame from the people who mattered at the university. And so Ole Miss is always trying to dial this back. Like, they're always trying to stave off those folks because they're not just making Ole Miss look bad. They're making the state of Mississippi look bad. Texas as a university does not represent the entire state in that way. There is zero shame present here. They are not worried about, like, you know how this is going to look, right? There's no concern about that. Like, when Kroom was at Mississippi State, one thing we both know is the SEC, if nothing else, was very concerned with how everything looked. regarding his time there. They wanted to make sure that when he got out of there, it worked. It worked. It didn't, but everybody was going to say it was cool.
Yep.
Texas does not care about stuff like that. They do not. And they would rather be mediocre and sorry at football than just be like, eh, maybe we should just engage in some dialogue with these guys about what's going on here. They're like, nah, we like the song. That's just what it comes down to. Y'all ain't going to tell us what to do.
There is, I think, a difference in gravity between the cultural relevance of being Texan and being Southern and the great dividing line of shame here, right? Because you can shame Mississippi. You can shame Georgia. It's hard. Okay. I live here. It's very hard to shame the people who would do embarrassing things or things that we would find incomprehensible in the 21st century in the name of maintaining power, but people will do it. In Texas, the shame is just gone. If you want to go like, what's the part of the equation we change here? Right? It's this. There's no shame whatsoever. And I think people, this is also like a matter of politics, right? You want to keep politics out of sports. Too bad. It just doesn't happen. And especially doesn't happen in Texas. All right. University of Texas is something that people fight over as a resource, and people fight over resources between University of Texas and Texas A&M. And the reason they don't play football has as much to do with politics as it has to do with anything that happened on the field. Right. By the way, fun fact, I was going over first year coaches this week, and Brian Harsin, offensive coordinator for that final victory that Texas had over Texas A&M. He's undefeated forever for them. And I thought, like, inadvertently, his first SEC victory right there, right? First victory in the SEC was defeating the Aggies when they were still playing each other out of the Big 12. So I really would love to have sports without politics. That'd be fun. But it doesn't happen. When you try to diagnose what happens at Texas, I think they kind of have Dutch disease, you know, like to use an economics term. I think they have a disease of the affluent. Everything when it comes to Texas football, there is no shortage of money. And for a time, that became the measure of success. They got their own network. They got their own deals. They created an entire league before any of that ever happened, constructed entirely around Texas. You talk about Texas playing in leagues that they should win. They should win because they're built around the University of Texas.
Yes.
Texas is the sun. And then there's all these other big planets that just sort of fall in line around it. And out back, there's, you know, Pluto, which is Baylor, just sort of somehow falling into orbit around the rest of it. That's another thing about Texas. They're spoiled. And I don't say that to say, okay, well, they're spoiled and that mindset affects everything. No, I mean, the money comes in whether they're good or not. And when that happens, there's very little incentive, right? Like, we talk about why you're going to be good. You're going to be good from pressure from boosters. You're going to be good from pressure from the administration. The administration is just concerned about keeping the pipeline going. They're concerned about keeping the money going. So that you just need to be so good in order to keep the money coming. The coach and maybe the alumni would be concerned about looking bad, but at Texas, we've seen that can go a long way. This is maybe where Joe Jamail, like we've talked about Joe Jamail, legendary Texas mega booster who passed away a couple of years ago, and a lawyer behind the greatest single deposition in the history of American law.
Yes.
Where at one point he challenges the person he's talking to a fight in the middle of the deposition. Joe Jamail was the one who, when Texas lost to UCLA 66-3, was the one who said, how much do I have to pay to get my name off it?
He donated enough money to the program that it was just Joe Jamail Field. And when they lost that game to UCLA, he was like, what do I have to do to get my name off of this?
Mm-hmm. And that, by the way, is not just a matter of money. He donated a lot of money to Texas. He's not the only guy who donated a lot of money to Texas. That's somebody who understood how to organize, win fights, and get people in line. That's what I think when you go like, what do you need to be good as a college football team? I'm like, you need a central organizing figure. You know who that is for Alabama? They got two. Okay. They have a mega booster, Paul Bryant, the son of Bear Bryant. Okay. Paul Bryant Jr.
Who, by the way, runs his own bank.
By the way, he's on his boutique bank now. That's Bryant Bank. Okay. Because he was on the board of one before that was the big serious bank. Now he's on the boutique bank. And I think he's out of the dog track business, which is my favorite thing to say is when you go, how did Paul Bryant make money? You're like, among other ventures, he was in the dog track business and that helped fund Alabama football. No, Paul Bryant. You know what Paul Bryant doesn't want? Bad publicity. Doesn't want anybody out of line, right? That program is part of his lineage. That program is part of his legacy. And he doesn't want any bad news. And you know who he hired? A guy who can get everybody in line. Boosters down to the janitorial staff. And that is a dictator. You hired Nick Saban. And when you get somebody like that who can deliver, right, who will give you six national titles, then yeah, everybody's going to fall in line. I don't want to make that sound easy. but you need an order. Texas doesn't have anyone at home who's going to be the adult in the room and say, this is a stupid fight. Right. This is a fight that hurts our ability to get talent in the door.
You're right, because the thing with Joe Jamel, it was peace during the Mack Brown time, even when they were losing. First thing Mack Brown did when he got to Austin was hire Joe Jamel as his lawyer. It's the biggest move that he ever made. It's the most important move. Somebody's got to be in charge, because the history of the school comes into play too, because Texas is, as a university, like, they were pioneers in using standardized testing as an admission standard, specifically as a way to stop Black people from getting in to the school. When they were trying to keep Black people out of the law school at the University of Texas, they did something that's happened in other states, though, which is open a law school at Texas Southern so that you couldn't say that the Black folks did not have a place where they could go to school. They have fought integration so hard at every turn. And the biggest thing is they just refuse to share. Like, once these doors have opened up, they refuse to share. So when all this stuff went down last summer, there were a lot of concessions that they made about, like, renaming buildings and stuff like that. Like, they got those. But the one place they weren't going for is this damn song. Like, they were just so insistent on this damn song. And so the problem that I have, and I think people aren't talking about enough, is last year those guys weren't required to stand for the song. And the image that everybody's always going to remember is playing the role of Alejandro Villanueva, Sam Ehlinger, on the field after the Oklahoma game, throwing up the pointer and the pinky, right, while the band plays. Now everybody else looks like they immediately become a problem. Like, the way they're doing this is almost kind of like these mask mandates, where you got to have the mask mandate, because otherwise, if you don't and somebody says, I'm enforcing the mask thing at the store, that's when people get shot, you know? And so the cats that don't want to stand for this are going to be 100% fully exposed to everything, which has involved threats of you'll never work in this state again already. You're really going to stop those guys from going to Ohio State like that? Way to go. Like, that's before the inhumanity of it is what it is. But so functionally, when Alabama decided we're going to start recruiting Black people, right, to play football, Bear Bryant was like, well, look, if we're going to do it, we're going to do it.
Yeah.
You know? And by the way, those dudes love him. Like, the Sylvester Crooms, the Ozzie Newsoms, all those cats, they love Bryant. I am not saying anything about what kind of man Paul Bryant was. I'm just telling you, they love that dude. But Alabama decided, okay, if we're going to do this, damn it, we're going to go ahead and have to do it. That's fine. Texas has always been like, I mean, we don't have to do it, just so you know.
It also comes down to this, that ultimately, if you are in or out, then you have to decide whether you, I mean, as a fan, or if you're involved in administration or at any level of this, do you love the players? And by love, I mean like a neighborly love. Do you really want them to be part of the club? Do you respect them? Do you hear them? Do you say, this program is yours? Comes down to ownership. It comes down to whether you're invested or not. Literally invested, as in I own this. Nobody owns a college football program day to day more than the players. Nobody. Nobody. And ideally, what you would want moving forward is for them to understand and feel that you would love them, and that you would want them to be a part of this. And that if they say, hey, we don't want to do this, and we got a pretty good reason for it, you don't publish like a 70-page report that says, you know, this thing's not overtly racist. By the way, do you want the most lukewarm endorsement of anything? It's to say, this thing is not overtly racist, right? It's like saying, you know, this thing, it's not super radioactive. It's like only kind of radioactive. You could put it on a shelf and it would be fine. Well, what if there were people in that room with this semi-radioactive thing? That probably wouldn't be good, but that's not what we're doing here. It's making the argument by isolating the thing and saying, okay, it's not overtly racist, but you know, when we actually use it and put it into motion, yeah, it's pretty racist and it makes people uncomfortable. You either buy in or you don't buy in, right? Like, I cannot understand the notion of you trying to define this from the seats, as opposed to, I'm not taking a hit. I'm not the one who's actually putting all the work into this game that I supposedly love and support, right? Do you love the game or do you love the tailgate? I think a lot of people doing this, they love the tailgate and they love the notion of this like antiquated, extremely kind of racist song that makes them feel like they're part of something that is no longer here. It's really writing checks to a dead estate. That's what you're doing.
Dummies. There's a line in the Aggie War Hymn, if I'm not mistaken, that goes, the eyes of Texas are upon us. That is a song we sing so well. Sing like hell. And do you realize how hard you have to work to put Texas A&M in a position to flex on your racism? Like, do you realize that? Like, do you understand that they have done this? So, like, within the state, there's, like, an understanding of the racism at the University of Texas, but A&M is just, they're less sophisticated about it, right? Like, that's mm-hmm. that's just, like, the whole idea and notion. But I think if you ask the average Black person in Texas if you would rather attend Texas or Texas A&M, they'll say Texas 9 out of 10 times. Like, just about every Black person that's at A&M is on scholarship. Ain't no Black people paying no money to go to school down there, by and large. Now they looking at you. Jimbo Fisher's going to be out here like, you need to come to College Station, a place where they kind of love you. Now, granted, they had their little protests out there and their weird encounters with the mm-hmm. people outside, but at least those people were talking with them. Like, the boosters are just talking at these dudes.
Mm-hmm. And there's a big difference between starting ignorant and talking with somebody, maybe ending up in a spot, than to talk at somebody and not hear a damn thing. That's yeah. the difference here. The other amazing thing to me is this, that yeah, everybody looks better and Texas A&M looks better, and Texas A&M has looked better for a long time. Okay, Jackie Sherrill, genius, absolute genius, because he figured out, you know how I can get you to be comfortable in a place, I'm probably going to give you some extracurricular benefits.
Yes,
maybe in the form of some subtle non-barterable currency. And then I'm also going to make sure that on top of all of this, I'm gonna make sure you feel comfortable. I mean, that's it. All you had to do was feel an nth more comfortable there than you did in Austin. That's it. Yeah. Just make the effort, right? Like, I feel like this is something that some coaches really catch on to, which is this, that I think Black athletes go so far out of their way to make everybody else comfortable in a situation. They will put in 95% of the work to go, you know what? I'm going to try to understand this situation. I'm going to try to go into this, and I'm going to try to really read everyone around me, and I'm going to hear every word, and I'm going to try to understand the situation. And their white counterparts don't have to do that.
Mm-mm. Texas is flexing on their right to not care. That's all yeah. it comes down to, is you will not make us care about how it is that this makes you feel.
Mm-hmm.
That's it.
You'd have to do what? If you're a white Texas booster, you'd have to do 5% of the work in order to make everybody feel 100% more comfortable.
It also spells out the reason why they give the money is not because they want Texas to be good, because mm-hmm. of where they want to stand in the hierarchy within what they have. Like, my complaint I've had about Texas on this, I feel like they need to think about and consider, is actually pretty simple. I'm sure there are other people who would actually love to give you guys a lot of money, but they can't get the flex from giving that money because these people are already there and already in line. Like, they're not getting the same return on the millions they would give that a Red McCombs would get for the same amount. If these people, and I don't know how Red feels about this one, to be clear, I got to be careful about that. But you clear those dudes out, there's a long line of people that want flex, that want juice. There's more people that would love to give you money to run this program, and they'd probably be better at it.
Yeah. And by the way, this is something where you go, have colleges made this worse? Yeah, they have, because they've turned this into like a marketing scheme, or they've turned this into like a club where there are tiers. You know, like literally tiers, right? Where you say, okay, yeah. well, you're at this level, but if you gave a little bit more, you'd get to this level. Oh, or you could get to this level, right? Which is really increased fundraising, because you get, oh, I have an incentive.
People love that stuff.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Because remember, when you get a certain amount of money, what's the only thing that's going to make you happy? Feelings. That's it. Because you've taken care of pretty much your material needs. So what's going to happen now? Now everything past a certain point in wealth is just maintaining your feelings.
Close my rings again.
Mm-hmm. That's it. Or, you know what? I was hurt because I thought I was comfortable, and then I saw a bigger yacht.
Yep.
Going to need a bigger yacht. I thought I was really, really something exclusive and special at the University of Texas, and then I saw that there was a Joe Jamail level of giving, and I could give that because money doesn't mean anything to me anymore, and it would make me feel a little more special. Universities have made this accidentally worse by creating this tiered system, and now you have boosters who are competing for ownership of something that they don't really own, and a game that they don't make better.
And by the way, they'll never stop giving, by the way, mm-mm. because there are extrinsic benefits to the giving that they would stop receiving if they were to stop giving. Like, you can stand up to them. It seems weird, but you really can, because it's not like, okay, if I'm a fundraiser for a hospital, if I stand up to them, they'll just go to another hospital. That's not mm-hmm. how this works. There's no place else for you to go. Like, you're not just all of a sudden going to turn up and become the biggest Texas Tech booster.
Mm-hmm.
It's not happening. You're here.
Parking. I always thought you should just extort people with parking. Nothing makes people feel more special at a college football game. Being able to pull right up to the stadium. Just park right across. That's it. If you told me, like, I like to think of myself as a very principled person. I like to think of myself as somebody who probably uses a little bit of reason before I make most decisions. But if you told me, hey, we have this thing we want you to do, and you're going to get to park in the Bull Gator lot right across from Ben Hale Griffin Stadium, I'd do a lot of really awful things probably to do that. I'm not proud of that statement, but I would. That's how you need to extort people. Say, hey, listen, do you want to park here? You got to do this. That is hitting people where they live. That is making somebody walk 400 yards more than they need to. And I don't think a wealthy person wants to do that.
Speaking of where people live, Myers Leonard, you mentioned this. He forgot where he, did he forget where he lived? And I mean like Earth, but specifically, whoa, boy, what a strange thing for you to do in Miami there, son.
Let's just review the situation a little bit here. Myers Leonard using a slur on a stream. Let me tell you this, that the world of video gaming, particularly online gaming, has a lot of young people who are just sitting there ingesting racist crap without even really knowing it, or worse, knowing it and then just spewing it out. So when you see Myers Leonard did this on a stream, let me tell you what, zero surprise. When you go, man, I heard a racial slur on a live game stream, you go, yeah, that's not the surprising part about this at all. Surprising part is that he did this for an owner who was born in Tel Aviv.
Yeah. And by the way, it was a tier one slur. It's definitely like, I feel like with black people, there's only one slur in tier one. And then we kind of go down to the next set of tiers. I feel like with slurs against Jews, there's a group that's up there at the top. And this one is, seems to be a big one.
It's a word that I have only heard two or three times in real life. And it's been from somebody who I would describe as outlandishly racist. And it's still shocking coming from them. It's a word that, you know, breaks your brain when you hear it, because you go, oh, like I tweeted this out, but like, it's a word that you go, oh, you go to meetings for this.
Yeah.
This is something, an organized, trained form of racism and anti-Semitism that you've signed up for. Additionally, by the way, not only did he do this while working for Mickey Arison, who, yeah, was born in Tel Aviv and yeah, is a major donor to a lot of Jewish causes, he did this in one of the largest Jewish communities in the United States, in Miami, while playing for the Miami Heat. There's a certain degree of, given flagrantly wrong and anti-Semitic this is, and then there's the contextual part that you add in and go, I really can't believe you had, not that it was okay to do this anyway, but like doing this in Miami, I'm like, there will be a reaction. Did you think nothing would happen? Did you think you could just let this pop? Additionally, did you see what happened afterwards on the stream?
Well, did he apparently jet out on all the chat and be like, oh, I got to help my wife with something?
She called him.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. The phone rang in the middle of the stream. Okay. Mm-hmm. I've seen two things on video game streams that blew my mind. One, pretty sure I saw a police raid on one, where the guy said, like, there's a knock on the door and you hear yelling and the sound of cops coming into the room. And then you hear the guy go, yeah, I gotta go. and then I heard this, which was the guy getting a call after everyone on the internet realized he had screwed up massively, and then watching and waiting for the call, and it happened. I cannot tell you the 1-2 anticipation drop fulfillment cycle that I went through watching this, because there was, oh God, I can't believe this idiot did this. And then you're waiting and waiting, and the phone rings, and you go, please say it, somebody telling him what he just did. And it was his wife. And then he had to go help her with something, which is probably packing, because he's getting traded.
Yo, no, I think he getting cut, because you can't take him. Like, he's not good. Now, my thought on this is, if you wanted your own guided tour of the Holocaust Museum, you should have just asked. Right? Because that's definitely going to be part of the rehab process, right? Like, this is where you go and they walk you around. And I do think those things, as much as we joke on those things, I think that they can be effective, right? Like, I, you know, and it's entirely likely that for Leonard, he just threw that out there, right? And didn't think much of it. But then you go spend a few hours looking at that depravity and you're like, oh, well, okay, I can see how you then all of a sudden realize, like, yo, this is a lot more important than I thought it was. What I don't understand is how you stop, think about it. Because that's what he did. He was talking, and then he stopped, thought about it, and then went right back at it. And I'm like, hey, dog, you know your money's on the line here, right?
Yeah, you're not a streamer. You're not ninja. You're not out there. No, this is not how you make your money. It is not.
No. Like, you can't be like, no, I'm in my rapper persona right now. Like, that was the thing when Allen Iverson did the 40 bars joint. Mm-hmm. Allen Iverson's looking at it like, no, you don't understand. I'm doing my rap thing right now. And they're like, no, dog, it's always an Allen Iverson thing now. And that's ours. No. You don't get to hop in and out of this. Like you don't get to go between Cactus Jack and Mankind. No.
And additionally, when you are online, it's all on record. I feel like it's taken some people 20 to 30 years to learn this, but it's all there. And especially when it comes to streaming, oh, they're going to capture you saying it. It's not just going to be a voice that you could go, well, I don't know if that's me. No, that's your face on there because you put the little stream thing on there. It's you. There's no deniability. There's no cover for it. You're not going to get away from this. You did it. The other thing that shocks me, by the way, is that Myers Leonard made $9 million last year.
Oh, yeah, and I think that's down from what he was making before.
Mm-hmm. He made $9 million last year. You know what he's not going to make next year? $9 million. You're going to be able to quantify the chunk this takes out of his paycheck.
Well, let me tell you what else surprised me. Did you read his apology?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I want to read his apology word for people because I want them to understand my level of confusion about the way that this has been handled by he and his posse, his camp, his team, right? Like, mm-hmm. We got to start using new kind of words for them. So Myers Leonard said, I am deeply sorry for using an anti-Semitic slur during a live stream yesterday. My ignorance about its history and how offensive it is to the Jewish community is absolutely not an excuse, and I was just wrong. I am now more aware of its meaning, and I am committed to properly seeking out people who can help educate me about this type of hate and how we can fight it. I acknowledge and own my own mistake, and there's no running from something like this that is so hurtful to someone else. This is not a proper representation of who I am, and I want to apologize to the Arisons, my teammates, coaches, front office, and everyone associated with the Miami Heat organization, to my family, to our loyal fans, and to others in the Jewish community who I have hurt. I promise to do better and know that my future actions will be more powerful than my use of this word. And, like, you ever read a statement and you feel like they didn't run it by any, like, something about this happens to black people, and I read it, I'm like, oh, they didn't run this by any black people, and then you realize they don't have any black people to run it past? I don't feel like you got that same excuse in this same situation. I did not feel like they ran this past any Jewish people, because I imagine they would have read that and been like, nah, dog, you're going to have to do a little bit more than this.
Mm-hmm. Imagine where he could have done that while playing for maybe Mickey Arison. Maybe you could have asked him, right? Like, that's, how do you have that few people? That's another matter of context here, by the way. And I know a lot of people like, okay, this is the same guy who was like the only NBA player who stood for the national anthem, and people say, well, you know, he has a brother in the Marines. You don't think anyone else in the NBA has family in the military?
Right.
That's that. Like, I haven't done a lick of research on this, but I'm going to play the numbers and guess that across the NBA, somebody else has family in the military, right?
Right.
This is not the only guy, and that it wouldn't be shocking because you would go, well, maybe a heightened sense of patriotism and lack of solidarity with your teammates might indicate that you are not on the same page in several ways with the rest of your teammates in this matter, right? Which you are free to do, but it might also explain a few things.
Let me tell you where he's not with his teammates on this matter, I imagine. His teammates heard that and immediately were like, oh, dog, you in trouble.
Mm-hmm.
I was talking to somebody about this the other day that I saw, and I don't want to say that it was this many. I don't know the proportion of people who were of this opinion, but I saw some people on Twitter who, Jewish folks, who were very concerned and felt like the NBA was not going to take this seriously, you know, that they were just going to make this thing go away. And to me, that's fascinating because all my black friends are like, oh, you going down, right? Like, I don't know. And I don't know if those same Jewish people would look at something like that if it happened with a black person and say, well, you know, if they said that about a black person, da, da, da. I don't know if that's how they feel it, but I think that there's an irony to that fact because if they say something about us, we're like, yeah, something will probably happen, but we don't know. We hear what happened here. We're like, oh, no. Don't you worry, guys. They're going to get on this. Like, all of a sudden, we start sounding like white folks. Like, oh, don't you worry. They're going to do something about this.
I think I can suggest this, that by and large, when it comes to something like this, that people rightfully give up on white dudes. Like, that's the, when you talk about voter outreach and people go, okay, well, you know, like, Democrats need to reach out to white men. Really? No. They've just given up. They're just like, oh, okay, that's just racist and beyond hope. Like, and I think that's like, if a black player did that, there might be the understanding that, being under some oppression, maybe we could have a dialogue where we come to a common understanding of how oppression affects us both, right? That's not something, that's not even a starting point for a white athlete, right? And justifiably so, because you go, well, how are you going to understand this at all? How are you going to even relate to this? We can ask you, and the sad answer is this, you could go, well, we could appeal to your basic sense of empathy. That's not, that's, it's such a brutal calculation to make, but to go, will Myers Leonard ever understand this? Really? Will he ever sort of have the ability to get it? I don't know. He's made a lot of money, been real successful being himself to this point in life. I don't really believe people learn a lot or change a lot. That's a very cynical calculation. But when you're dealing with somebody you don't know and circumstances that you may not fully understand, it's a pretty solid bet. And I don't think he got there by accident. And I don't think it's the kind of thing where, barring some extraordinary sense of personal growth, people are going to change.
Well, like, I'm Black Southern and I didn't go to church. So like anti-Semitism in these ways, it's like, so it's still like conceptually mind blowing to me, because before living in Miami, I'd never lived in a place where, like, I don't think I knew any Jewish people. Like, I don't even understand how this is coming up in conversation. And then, like, I started working at the Score in Toronto, and it was a lot of Jewish cats that worked up there. I didn't even know they were Jewish, because they were just white dudes. Like, it was not until my adulthood that I recognized that, like, the humor on Seinfeld, for example, is fairly specific. Being Jewish is part of the joke. Because we don't do that. Like, I thought that was just New York. You know what I mean? Like Morty and all that. Like, we didn't do that where I was from. And so you get, like, the Holocaust chapter. You're like, yo, this is terrible. Okay, great. Glad we all learned that we can't do this kind of stuff anymore. I had no idea that it was people, like, still out here really leaning in and fighting this fight until, like, well into my adulthood. Because I look at somebody like him saying that, I'm like, what's this even got to do with anything? Y'all just playing video games.
Yeah. And that's the other thing, is that if you're on the internet, guess what you get to do? You just receive pretty much what people think isn't being watched or isn't being heard, right? You think it's private. For some reason, you think that it's okay to say, because, I don't know, it's on the internet. Who's really paying attention, right? Myers Leonard went to high school in Robinson, Illinois. That's like on the line between Illinois and Indiana, right?
Ooh.
Yeah.
Oh, he knew what he was saying.
He knew what he was saying. He never faced any consequences for it. That's the thing, is that he didn't have anybody to push back on him. You want to know where prejudice really wilts? It's when you get beat for it. It's when you suffer consequences for it. It's maybe the first time that in his life that he's actually going to have to deal with it. And I don't understand how that happened, right? And I'm going to say this. I think Myers Leonard kind of lives on the border between stupidity and malice, where they're almost completely indistinguishable, right? Because if you have played basketball your whole life and you have not soaked in at least a little bit by osmosis the struggle and the discrimination that another group who is not, say, a white dude who is 6'9 or 6'10, whatever, right, face every single day. If you've gotten through that, you are a special kind of obtuse. You are a special kind of dense. You're made of a material that is non-permeable on levels I do not understand.
Well, here's where I'm going to cut up a little bit of slack.
Okay.
A little bit. We got to realize, man, me and you grew up in a different generation. And you know what our generation grew up with? Very special episodes.
Yeah.
These kids ain't getting very special episodes. They didn't make no remake of School Ties with Brendan Fraser for this young man to become aware of, you know, the plight and what people was like. I'm kind of joking, but not. Because, like, I do think that there's something to, like, the idea of those representations and seeing them and being like, oh, this is a thing. Because for me, again, I had no concept that this was it. But maybe a couple of very special episodes of some of these shows will help these kids at an early age realize, at the very least, you ain't about to be out here acting like you didn't know what it meant. What did you think it meant when you said it? Because that's a pretty random syllable to just throw out there, right? What did you think it meant if you didn't know what it meant? That's the part that gets me, is the, I didn't know what I was saying. Yeah, you did.
Yeah. Also, by the way, don't test drive stuff on the internet. Don't test drive stuff you heard on the internet in real life. Don't. It doesn't fly. Okay. This is the malignant racist version of, I have to explain a joke I told in real life that I learned on the internet. And it requires several layers of things that I didn't properly understand. Or in Myers Leonard's case, things that he understood but thought could fly because I said it on the internet or someone else said it. Don't. It's like, you will crash and you will burn. Yeah. It's not good.
And we will add him to a long list of people who are living out what is in part my nightmare and what I've constructed a lot of my life around not having have happened. I am not going to lose it all trying to make y'all laugh. How much money has been set on fire by people trying to make strangers laugh? Right? Non-professionals, by the way, because we give the professionals all the slack in the world. Non-professionals trying to make people laugh. Set it on fire every time. I hope on everything that it ain't going to be me.
It will be Myers Leonard. And like I said, you'll be able to count it. You'll go, how much did this cost you? We'll probably be able to see. And you'll go, oh, that's not a lot of money for an NBA player. It's a lot of money for you. It's a lot of money for everybody else.
Or, and this is something that can happen too. And I want to be like, I bring Tim Hardaway up a lot because somebody has to. Because Tim Hardaway got on that radio show with Dan, and Dan asked him what he thought about having a gay teammate, you know, many, many years ago. And Tim Hardaway said, no, I would, you know, I don't want to be around them, all this stuff. Like, it was really vile and hateful and indefensible. And I've talked to Dan about it a lot. And Dan always says that this was the rare time. He said maybe the only time that somebody got mired in a controversy in a situation like that and called him and said, it's my fault, I messed up. You know, like, just to be clear, like, look, just so you know, I'm the one who did this. Since then, Tim Hardaway, this is over a decade now, has been on the grind for LGBT causes. Like, he really is the dude who was told how much his words hurt people and went and did all the stuff that we asked people to do and went all the places and everything. He did all the stuff you're supposed to do. And nobody cares about that part. Like, nobody goes and checks it out. Ray Rice is another example of that. It is entirely possible that, what's his name? Myers Leonard. It's entirely possible he could turn out to be the greatest advocate that we've had on this. And if he doesn't, he ain't going to be playing basketball. Understand that.
Yeah, yeah. And I hope, like to be clear, I really hope that happens. That would be the happy story, right? That's not sort of the cynical...
I'm betting on it.
I wouldn't bet on it, right? Like, I don't...
Tell you this, though, that will be the story if he were to play for the Miami Heat. I do think that. Like, Mickey Harris is like, here's a long list of people that you can call.
And you have to call all of them. And I will make sure you call all of them in order to understand this. Because when you mess up this badly, right? And I think we've all done this to one degree or other in life. You call all the numbers and you do everything you can. And it's still there. It's still there. It's not going to go away. It can't be undone.
He need to understand. He ain't Nick Cannon. Like, Nick Cannon, they had already put that season of The Masked Singer in the can. They're like, oh, damn, we got to figure out how to rehabilitate this dumbass after he went out here and messed this up for everybody. And I'm sure he went through quite a process to get to that point, but they need to keep him. Didn't nobody need to keep Myers Leonard? And the last thing I would say before we wrap this up as we get into time, I don't know if you've seen this from last night. Ira Winderman of the South Florida Sun Sentinel got this quote from Udonis Haslam on the impact of Myers Leonard's words on the Jewish community. Quote, we apologize. That won't be tolerated here. I felt that. I have a lot of Jewish friends. They call me Udonis Haslamberg at times.
You can't see my face, but I'm...
What are you... Why did you say that to Ira?
You're doing so... You're doing so... The other thing here, too, is this. I sometimes think that as a person, if you get to 20 words, you haven't said anything bad, stop. There's some people who need to do that, you know?
Let me tell you something I figured out about black people when it relates to, like, bad people who have been around a lot of Jews. They're really bad at complimenting them, right? Like, everything that black people think is a compliment to say about Jews, Jews are like, no, actually, this ties into a trope. Like, it is the virtual equivalent of, like, a white dude looking at me and being like, I mean, I wish people thought mine was big, right? I'm like, yeah, I get where you're coming from, but you don't understand that there's a different, there's a different level of this. So black people are like, yo, we need to stick together like Jewish people do and pool our money together and get us some control. And Jews are like, no. Like, people believing this about us has gotten us killed. Oh, but we're like, no, we think it's dope. Like, yo, that's what everybody tells us we need to do. Like, there's this huge disconnect. And so, Udonis Haslam is saying that, being like, no, they really rock with me, you know? They're like, no.
Again, if you're going to mess up one-on-one. Don't mess up in public. One-on-one, yes. I could do that work. That's one person, right? Don't mess up million-on-one, because there's no way you're going to make all million correct at the same time. By the way, this is again where, again, I as a white male, you just get, like, you get the high side of this, because the best compliment I've ever gotten from a black person, period. The best compliment was this. And it was talking and having a conversation, just like we're doing, perfectly normal. And this woman looked up at me and goes, you know what I like about you? And I was like, oh boy, that's just never a good thing to hear. Right? Because this is going to go sideways, probably, because most people are terrible at giving compliments, period, especially across any kind of even small cultural barrier. This, she said, you're white. And I like that about you. And I was like, I have nothing I can say to go in any positive direction for this. Not even thanks, because thanks sounds weird, right? You're like, Oh, yeah, cool. No, I was like, could you explain that? And she did explain that. And she had a good reason. But for a minute there, I was in a very scary space because I had no direction to go with that compliment.
Was None. The explanation being that you are white and you are who you are and do not try to adjust that in the presence of other people? Because I was actually going to say that one of your most endearing characteristics is I feel like I can take you anywhere and you are going to be this person wherever that place is, while also being respectful of whoever the people are that we have now stumbled upon. And white folks can't always do that.
Thank you. See, you just take cool. Great. And that is what she said, right? That is exactly what she said. There were 9,000 different terrifying directions that could have gone, right? It could have gone so many bad ways, right? And I know that you're black. And when you hear something, you go, hey, you know what? You know what I like about you and how you're black? If you hear that, you're like, oh boy. Like,
no, nothing good. Nothing good's on the way.
No. Nothing good. You know, you should just start it with, you know what I like about you? There. If you're going to do that and you're communicating at all cross-culturally, you know what I like about you? And make it something tangible. Don't, right? Just feel like, you know what? Great ears. This person has great ears. Like, I've always liked that about you. Don't, when you say, hey, I like you because you're white, you go, boy, I can't say anything to that. I'm just going to let you roll.
Yep. Wise play. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is how you wrap this up. Check out Spencer Hall, Shut Down Full Cast. He'd be all over the place. Google the man up. And ladies and gentlemen, thanks so much for joining us here on The Right Time. We do this thing a couple times a week. My man Gabe Bassane handles everything behind the scenes. Thank you, sir. Remember, subscribe to The Right Time. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. We'll talk to you guys in a couple of days. Take it easy.
Thanks for checking out The Right Time with Bomani Jones Podcast.
You can listen or subscribe on the ESPN app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
The Right Time
with Bomani Jones.